We have an incoming call already. Let's go to the phone and see what they have to say. What do you say? Here we go. Hi, you're on the air. Hello. Oh, hello. That must have been a bad call. I don't know. I'm going to shut it off. It said it was out of the area, so maybe it was somebody that's trying to sell the radio station insurance. What do you? How many phone calls do you get like that? A lot, right? I'm really tired of those phone calls. Anyway, welcome to Thursday. I think it's November 3rd, isn't it? Something like that. And it was a rather chilly morning. I took the puppy dog out. Let's see, what time did we go out? We went. Oh, it's the 4th, by the way. We went out at, I don't know, about 7 o'clock. Actually, we got out at about 6 o'clock. And it was cold. I think it was below freezing. I had my heavy coat on. It was all tucked in. And we got our business done. I saw an interesting... I'm a member of a group online that likes to look at Far Side. You know, usually it's one picture of somebody doing something outrageous. Quite often entails monsters and stuff like that. But the Far Side, it showed a guy on a phone angrily calling his neighbor saying, "Mr. Jones, your dog is doing his business on my front yard." And you look over at the dog and he's sitting at a desk doing business. Real business, not that type of business. I enjoyed that sort of thing. Anyway, I hope you enjoy Far Side. Far Side is a little crazy, and sometimes it's a little too crazy for me, but most of the time I get a little chuckle out of it, and I have friends that send that stuff to me. Well, we have found out sort of what's going on with the electoral, the snafu of not getting any of the results after the first, I don't know, maybe 10% that we got, or about 8:30, and then nothing till 11:30, something like that. So we do have a report on that we'll be putting on. I think Scott said he's going to be putting on the news for this afternoon or tomorrow morning. So not very clear what was going on. So anyway, we will try and get that to you. Quite frankly, when I was sitting with Buddy was telling me, you're not ready to go to work today. And I said, I know. I have pulled up a lecture that I watched from Jason Stanley, who is a professor of philosophy at Yale, about Nazism and what entails. What he basically talks about how Nazism became a thing in Germany, and how they took over. Germany was not like that before, and how they took over that, and how many of our democracies could be easily taken over by a cult-type leader that would come in and just twist everything so that a majority of the people go along with the Nazism. Now, if you remember, most of the people in Germany probably had no idea about the concentration camps and things like that, but many of them did, and almost all of them denied it. So that type of thing went on back during World War II. And many of those people that denied it after the fact, when the war was over, paid dearly for ignoring the honest-to-goodness facts. And we'll just talk a little bit about that. I also found a book that I used to use all the time. It's called Inspirations, 365 Days of the Year, and basically it's Zig Ziglar pulled it together. It's basically quotes for a quote for every single day of the year. If you listen to this show, you know that I love quotes, and I gotta admit, the reason why I love quotes is because I do a radio show, and people, I guess, look up to me for that. I don't know why, but I'm here to tell you right now, I am not a philosopher. I have not studied philosophy. I am not a true politician. I mean, I haven't studied politics. I wasn't a poli-sci major. I was a speech and drama major. I was an actor who knew how to talk. So please, please don't take what I say as the gospel. And I'm using that term loosely, but please don't take it that way. Think for yourself. I'm just telling you the way I see things. And one of my least favorite quotes is, there many people have said things like, "I tell it like it is." Well, that's BS. You tell it like you think it is, right? You don't. In most cases, the people who are telling you like it is don't know how it really is. They just know what somebody else told them it was. And that's kind of what I do. I'm passing on tidbits that I think sound logical and sound right. Thing from Jason Stanley today, this lecture that I listened to, he could be all wet. Now, he does have his, he is a doctor, and he's a professor of philosophy at Yale, so he's got a leg up on me, about four legs up on me, and so I kind of trust people like that. I kind of trust people who have education and know what they're talking about, or at least think they know what they're talking about, but I don't think any of us, you, me, or anybody, should take anybody else's word for anything as gospel truth, if you'll excuse the expression again, because in many cases it's just it's knowledge that was built on other knowledge built on other knowledge from people that none of us knew, you know. And unless you're there in person watching the incident, you probably don't know what went on. And even then, if you're to believe law enforcement officials, many eyewitness accounts are absolutely wrong. So, should you believe your eyes? Well, I think they're better than believing somebody else's eyes, right? You believe your eyes long before. If somebody comes to you and says, "I saw a guy robbing a bank, and he was," and he gives you a description, the chances of him knowing that for a fact are probably, 60%, something like that. So if you pass it on, you know that game where you sit around in a circle and the person at the beginning gets told a story, and then he's supposed to tell his friend, and his friend's supposed to tell the next guy and around the story. When it gets all the way around the circle, it doesn't sound anything like what it sounded when it went in the front, right? So be skeptical on just about everything. Doesn't mean you have to be negative. You can be skeptical and be positive about things. Skeptical to me means that you question things. You know, okay, so he said that. Well, what if somebody else said the opposite of that? Why is that other person wrong and this guy's right? You know, and we have a lot of that going on right now, don't we? Oh, boy. I mean, both sides. All three sides. All around. We have, what, 330 million people? And I think we have 330 million people, views of what happened on January 6th. And nobody is absolutely right. Even the people that were in the middle of it aren't right. As a matter of fact, the people that were in the middle of it probably are as far from right as anything, because they were so carried away with what they were doing and not what was going on around them. Someday I'd like to talk to a person that was involved directly in that and try to find out if maybe it wasn't a bit of crowd, I don't know what the term is, but where you go along with the crowd because you're caught up in the moment. There's probably a psychological term for that, but I don't know it. Again, I will tell you, don't believe what I say. Just listen and make up your own mind. I am not an expert in anything. The only thing I'm an expert in is how to love a dog. That's about all I'm an expert in. And maybe how to love your children and your grandchildren. I'm pretty good at that too. I'm leaving my wife out because I don't think she'd agree that I'm good at how to love your wife. Anyway. Today the first session, and before we get to Swap Shop, which will come at 12:15. So don't forget, you can call in here. You can call in while we're doing this show too. It's 740-383-9944. I'll give that to you again after I tell you this one little caveat. You can call in on either show, and if you call in to Swap Shop, we do ask that you not try to sell things that are registered, like a car or a gun or a house or, you know, things like that. And we'd like you to keep it to three or four items. You know, and leave your phone number. We'll put it on the air. People will call you if they need what you have. But again, that phone number for either this show now or that show, which is called Swap Shop, starting at 12:15, 740-383-9944. Okay. And so in the first 2 hours, we've got the lecture from Professor Stanley. And I'm going to just basically try to tell you what I understand from his listed the points of what caused or what might cause Nazism, what caused it. You know, you can listen to the points and you can say, well, are we going down that path? Is Italy going down that path? Is Nicaragua going down that path? You know, you can kind of judge it to look at the leader and say, maybe, I don't know, Uruguay is going down that path, or England is going down that path. You know, you can kind of look at all the fundamentals of the leadership and try and decide if there are countries or leaders that are dragging their country into Nazism or closer to Nazism. Now, one of the reasons why I'm interested in that, I've been called a socialist, and I really don't think of myself as a socialist. I think of myself as a capitalist. I mean, I owned a business for 5 years, and I was in intercollegiate athletics, which, believe it or not, it's money has a lot to do with intercollegiate athletics. I guess I'm more socialistic than a lot of people in that I think we need safety nets for those who can't catch themselves, you know, that sort of thing. But anyway, people have called me a socialist, and for some reason or other, if you're called a socialist, that automatically means you're going to be called a communist, which they have nothing to do with each other. Well, I suppose they have little things to do with each other, much like democracy has little things to do with each other. But for some reason or other, you get it gets extended. If you're called a socialist, then a communist, then for some reason or other, people think, not you're a Nazi because of that. Well, Nazism is probably as far from those things as anything can be. But it's because we all judge the world, especially us older folks, judge the world on what we saw during World War II. Now, I was kind of alive during World War II. Well, I was conceived on Victory in Japan Day. Now, I know that sounds gross, but that's what my father told me, so I'm believing it. So I'm pretty close to World War II, but not right in World War II. Now, my wife, who is an older woman, was born during World War II. But anyway, oh, she's going to kill me if she hears. Don't tell my wife, all right? Don't tell her I said that. Anyway, so that's why I'm going over these points. I was interested to listen to Professor Stanley talking about what creates the desire for Nazism within an institution or within a country. And so I'm going to do that along with that book that I told you about, Inspiration. And the inspirations are all quotes that are just fantastic quotes. I'm not a big Zig Ziglar fan, but he certainly has picked out some of the greats. I'm going to give you January 1st, okay? Do what you can with what you have where you are. And that's a quote from Theodore Roosevelt. That's the type of quotes. They're inspirational quotes trying to get you off the couch, okay? And we'll talk about that sort of thing. All right, let me take one short break here because I need to get a sip of coffee. I'm going to go dark for a second, and then I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back alive. All right, well, Jason Stanley, he's a fairly young professor of philosophy at Yale. He started off and said, one of the first things that all Nazi governments start with, and really there have only been a couple or a handful of Nazi governments, the Weimar Republic and, the Italians and the Germans, basically. But they both of them started off with a mythic past. People in those countries thought their past was glorious, but they were losing that past. So they were always looking to get back to greatness, which they had lost. In their mythic past, they were the number one country in the world. Even if other people didn't agree, they believed they were the best in the world and kind of had slipped, right? That's, they all, or both of the Nazi countries had that feeling. The Italians and the Germans felt that their country, many of us feel that our country is the best country, but, the Americans felt that our country is the best country. And they have that idealistic past where they think they were the best there was, and kind of they're losing it, so they're wanting to get back. The term "we were great" pops up. Not "we are great," but "we were great." Where did it go? Stanley says, without that seed, and that's the very beginning seed, without that seed of "we've lost our glory," you will not get anything like Nazism. That it depends on that sort of thing, and that starts to blossom. The people that want to change that and want to take over, and maybe up front, they believe in their heart of hearts that they're doing the right thing. They start to propagandize. They start to tell adjusted truths. They look at other nations as nations that are opposing them. They kind of put the victimhood on themselves. They look at, well, if you'll recall, Germany, after the First World War, really was a victim. And we helped them out. The world helped them out by really slamming the door on them and shoving them down in the cellar. And they, you can understand why they would have not only said we were great in the past and we've lost it, but we are victims, and we need to recreate that mythic legend, which means that there is going to be propaganda. And propaganda is usually not the full truth. It's a glorified truth, right? It's you tell somebody that the colors of the rainbow are in your life, and if you just follow me, and what may be told to you isn't necessarily the truth, but it's hopeful, right? And it makes you hope. So the propaganda kind of jumps up, and it really enhances the opportunities for people that want to move into a system of government where there can be a better world for, and many of the people that believe this, at the beginning of the German Nazi movement, many of the people really thought that it was going to bring Germany back to glory. They didn't think about concentration camps. They didn't think about a war. They didn't think about young men dying. They didn't think about anything. They just thought, we need to get back to where we were. So, and the propaganda was telling them they could get back to where they were because they were the master race, right? And that was kind of the big propaganda lie that was being spread. Well, maybe I doubt that any of them doubted that. When you look around in the United States of America and walk up to a citizen of America and you say, what is the best country? I would venture to say that 99 out of 100 will say the United States. And I would also say that 99 out of 100 would say we have the best form of government. Now, things currently might not be that way. But I think if you say to them, well, where would you rather be? Oh, no, they want to be in the United States. And there are a few people right now that are saying, well, Canada's sounding pretty good. But I don't think most of the people would feel that way. One of the things they have to do to develop this propaganda and make it believable is they have to be anti-intellectual. They have to be against thinking too much. They want you to, the leader, the person that's in charge of this movement, wants you to think that only he or she has the true answer. Science is very good if it agrees with the leader at this point. It's starting to get a little bit heavy-handed, right? We're not Nazis yet. But it is starting to get heavy-handed. By making, there were lots of book burnings during before the war, World War II in Germany. And the book burnings, if there was somebody that wrote a book that was anti whatever Hitler believed, those books tended to get tossed on the fire. Right now, we're kind of seeing that in the United States, where there is Nobel laureate whose book is being banned from some schools because people don't like she talks honestly about race. And when you're talking honestly, that doesn't necessarily mean you agree. But you're telling people what you believe in an honest way. If I believe that 2 plus 2 equals 5, and I truly, honestly believe that because I've done experiments and in my own mind it's worked out okay, that's not lying. That's telling what you truly believe. But if you say 2 plus 2 is 5 because somebody said, if you say it's 5, I'll give you a $10 bill, then it's more propaganda. It's not very honest. It's not very intellectual. It's just downright, I was going to say evil, but it's not quite evil. But it, I don't know. My mom and dad always said I shouldn't lie. And I used to lie like a I was a terrible liar when I was a kid. So I know how to lie. But, you know, you can lie enough times, eventually you make people, some people will believe your lie. And that's kind of what was done at the beginning of the Nazi takeover of Germany and also of Italy, where the leader would say something, and if science disagreed with him, science was wrong. If science agreed with him, he would hold that up and say, look, science says it, I'm right. So you've got to start to be a little skeptical. You've got to perk your ears up. You've got to pay attention to what people are saying. And we were talking about this the other day at the election, how few people really know what they're voting for. How few people know that, you know, the character of the people that they're voting for. When I was on the stump, when I was running for state representative, a lot of people would say to me, there are no honest politicians. Well, that's not true. I was an honest politician. Didn't get me anywhere, but I was an honest politician, and I would tell you what I honestly believed. And if you disagreed with me, I tried to listen to you. Some of the things that people would say to me were just so outlandish that I would listen, and as I was walking away from them, my mind would be going, oh my gosh, where is education in the United States of America? But anyway, unreality kind of starts to set in because the anti-intellectual leader has only allowed you to believe in the science that agrees with him. So a lack of reality starts to pop up. The leader says the truth has no matter. The facts imply the center of democracy, the center of, there is political equality, speaking truth to power. That's what people should do at this point, but they don't seem to do it. There is usually a movement, and there was a movement back in the 30s, to say, but mein Führer, that is not correct, and those people were not heard from later. So it's difficult to do. Speaking truth to power is very difficult. So your political equality starts to diminish, especially if you disagree with the leader in this case. That's kind of what causes this unreality to set in. Now, at first, there were people that believed, okay, I'm going to have to say something I don't believe in, but I want to keep my neck, so I will say it. As it went along, they found out that it didn't make any difference for Jewish people and for gypsies. It didn't make a bit of difference whether you agreed with Mein Führer or not. You just put in the gas chamber and away you go. And speaking to power was almost verboten. By the time they got to the war stance, it was verboten. The hierarchy. Well, there was a hierarchy. And the hierarchy is established in Nazism by saying this race is better or this gender is better than your race or your gender. It's unless you happen to be of my gender and my race. It's amazing how quickly the racial thing and the religion and even the gender thing popped into the Nazi cult at World War II. People that were mentally disabled were deemed to be not worth living. There were just so many things, and people tended to look away. They didn't watch what was going on because they knew they could not speak to power. And so now Nazism is starting to get very strong in Germany at this point. And then victimhood started to take over. The Führer convinced the racially pure white German that everybody was out to get him. Well, eventually everybody was out to get him, but they weren't at first. Was it Neville Chamberlain tried to go and talk to him and famously came back and said that he had gotten Hitler to agree to his terms, and then Hitler basically turned his back on it. Hitler was a kind of a liar. Hitler did what was best for Hitler, and even to his own country's detriment. Anyway, he and his cohorts, and if you ever look at the people that worked with Hitler, there were a lot of really unusual people, really warped. I'm going to use that term, really warped people, because you had to be warped, because you had to believe all the lies. You had to spout off all the lies like they were given to you from the Mount of Olives or something, you know, or Mount Sinai is what I meant to say. And so that sort of had crept in by then. If you believe that you're a victim, and law and order is the only way to protect yourself, you will jump on the law and order bandwagon. But one of the things that the Nazis did, one of the things that all Nazis do with law and order is law and order is good for the dominant person. Only those who are of the right race, of the right gender, of the right age, the right mental stability, the right religion, only those people get to get law and order. The rest of us, or the rest of those that are outside of that group, aren't really qualified to get law and order because they're not quite full humans. They're not quite in our group, right? All right. We start to get some a lot, especially in Mussolini's case and also Hitler's case, we start to get some sexual anxiety going on. I am not a therapist or I don't study that sort of thing, but you wonder if this sexual anxiety comes from a weakness in the people that lead this group. But it happened to be both Mussolini and Hitler were both people questioned whether they were really strong men, but they put on the front of being very strong men. It's kind of an animalistic type of way of being, you know. The man is dominant. The man will tell the woman what to do. The man is going to, if you don't agree with him, he's going to punch you in the nose, that type of thing. The strong man is made to feel that others are coming to take over. Going back to that victimhood thing. Well, if a strong man thinks others are coming to take over, what does a bear do when he thinks somebody's coming to take his, the other bear, the female bear that he's mating with at the time? He knocks his block off, right? And that's kind of what went on in Nazism. It kind of grew, another thing that many of these leaders do is they look at people outside of their area and they say, that place over there that has all those brown people, or that place over there that has women's rights, or that place over there where there are a lot of Jewish people, that is Sodom and Gomorrah. Cities right now, cities are full of bad people, right? That's what's being told by several of our politicians. The only pure people are those out working in the farms and those out doing what I tell them to do. That's that type of thing. Tend to be non-city areas tend to be more pure and therefore better. The people that live in the cities tend to be not so good, right? And then the leaders almost always, as a matter of fact, this happened to be on the gate at Auschwitz, I believe, work will make you free. They tell everybody, if you'd only work harder, you will be free, which in the back of their mind, they knew that was absolutely not true. If you were Jewish and you worked your tail off, you're still going to the gas chamber. Minority groups are all lazy. That's basically what they said. They must be made to do work because they're lazy. We saw that sign on Auschwitz that said, I was going to quote it in German, but I can't remember. But work will make you free. There tend to be then one person that tends to lead any Nazi regime, like Mussolini or Hitler. It tends to be it has been a male. Because it's kind of a macho type of thing. It's if we're going to have this Nazi organization, everyone must follow me because I'm the only one that knows the right way to go. So it becomes the cult leader is very macho, very heavy-handed, very strong, and makes his underlings become the same way. About people below them. So it's kind of, if you're in a Nazi regime, you will find that as you go down the ladder, you have, obviously less and less control, but you are less and less respected. And that's kind of the way it goes. Now, we're almost done with this first hour, and I'll come back in the next hour. We won't be quite so heavy, but we will talk about where the United States is in relationship to moving towards Nazism. I think if you've been listening to this, you will hear some similarities to things that have gone on, and why I am concerned about the possibility of losing a democracy. And I know that's a kind of a scare tactic, and I don't mean to do that. That's not my style. But I do want you to be aware that things could happen because we are kind of going down the path along the same lines as this. And then we'll get a little bit more inspirational as I get into some of these quotes. And, you know, I don't want you to wring your hands and say, oh my, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. I have people around me that do that for me. But I tend to think that things will work out. And maybe I'm just naive. But I hope that things work out. I think that things work in cycles. We get really far left at one point, and then we go really far right, and then we come back to, well, the parts that are in the middle. Maybe you get 30% far left, 30% far right, but there's 30% in the middle where everybody can relax and take a breath. And I hope we get there soon. Right now, we don't seem to be anywhere close to that. But we'll talk about what we have seen in the United States and hopefully let you make up some your mind. Maybe you think some of this stuff is not right, and that's fine. You should think it's not right, or at least you should be skeptical about everything I'm saying today and everything Professor Jason Stanley said about this, because that's the only way we get to be better and stronger is by listening, learning, questioning. If you don't do that, and I have a lot of friends that question nothing, and it's okay. I'll question for you. but it's better for your psyche if you can answer some questions at least for yourself. Why do I believe this? Well, I believe it because somebody told me it's true. That's not a good answer. Especially in life-changing decisions. Life-changing decisions, which I think many political decisions are, life-changing decisions should be things that you have weighed, you have looked at both sides, and found where the credit lies. If the credit lies to the right, then lean to the right. If the credit lies to the left, lean to the left. Nothing, though, is black and white. And just about everything is a shade of gray, right? Don't you agree? I mean, even if you're one of my favorite Republican friends, you will admit to me that nothing is black and white. However, I have read an article that says that the people who have conservative mindset tend to be more black and white than those of us who are tree-hugging liberals. Well, anyway, we're just about ready to break away for our 15-minute break, and I'll be back with the next 45 minutes, next hour, will be much more uplifting because we'll do some of these inspirational quotes. But I do want to finish this up by talking about where the United States is on that ladder that I talked about going to Nazism. Okay, well, come on back. We'll be back in 15 minutes.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Listen for guests like...